Welcome to this episode of The Good Fork with host Diana Edelman of Vegans Baby. We're bringing you interesting conversations, interesting people with a plant-based twist. Thank you all so much for tuning in to another episode of the Good Fork podcast. I am here today with Cynthia Nguanzo. She is the assistant executive pastry chef, is that right, at MGM Grand. Did I get all that right? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
So thank you for being on today, Cynthia. I really appreciate it. I just adore you. We actually met because I did the second James Beard Vegas Vegan Dinner in New York, and I was looking for a pastry chef, and one of my contacts at MGM said, oh my gosh, have you met Chef Cynthia? She's amazing. And then I remember the first time we met, it was me and then a public relations, I have like coronavirus brain, seriously, like my brain just isn't functioning normally right now. I think we all have that like brain fog. She's an MGM public relations coordinator, and we were having a tasting with you, and you brought out some of the most decadent desserts I've ever had in my life. And the thing is this, you had never made anything vegan up until that point, had you?
No, not at all. Actually, my best friend is vegan, and every time she invited me to my house, to her house to eat, I would be like, yeah, vegan, no, thank you. Sorry, you know, it's, I'm Hispanic, so I'm very flat out, I say what I think. I feel, you know, like they told me, you know, there's this opportunity to go to James Beard house. I think you would be great for it. You have to come up with a vegan dessert. And I'm like, hold on, what? And I feel that, you know, when you work in Vegas in general, I feel that we're put to the test every single day with so many different things. Like it's such a people mover all the time that you're constantly doing, you know, pulling things out of your sleeve. So I was like, okay, well, it can't be that difficult. I just can't use anything that I normally use. So let me try to figure it out. And I think we did that tasting, what, in September, maybe? Like, yes, September.
It must have been, yeah, because it was before I did my Thailand tour.
Yeah, and then I think one of the things that I really wanted to incorporate was a seasonality. And then, you know, being able to, because when you work for such a massive production, like what we have at MGM, it's so hard to really say, okay, it's November, now we're gonna do pumpkin everything. And, you know, those things don't happen. So it really was important for me to incorporate the seasonality. And for that first tasting, we did, was three desserts.
Yeah, yeah.
The one that you picked for the dinner, that was apple cider cheesecake. And the other one was, which I still want to do it in another flavor, the raspberry chocolate.
So bowl. Good.
That was really, really good.
It was so hard to choose, honestly,
and you know,
between
as I'm,
the two.
As I'm heading, yeah. Well, I'm glad that it paired well with everything else for the dinner. But I think one of the important things, you know, as I dived in and tried to find ingredients, and, you know, I think as Diana and I, after the dinner, I think we've become good friends. And I think now you know that I'm a nerd. So every time I'm doing something, I'm like researching, like, okay, let me read about it and I'll get back to you. And, you know, it was kind of hard for me to try, normally pastry, it's like milk, butter, gelatin, cream, and trying to find equivalents of that. Like, it makes me laugh sometimes when people say, oh, yeah, just put almond milk in it and it'll be fine. And I'm like, yeah, but it's not just the almond milk. I have to, like, consider the fat that the milk has and all that for the ingredients. So, you know, it was kind of like an interesting exercise to find things to use. And I think the more I went in, the more, you know, I gave it to people to try, trying to find the flavor, the consistency that was the same as a pastry chef. And give me the same
mouthfeel. Cynthia, let me back you up really quick. I lost you for a minute there. Can you say that last part again? We lost you after mouthfeel.
Yeah, so the more that I dived into it, the most important thing for me was, and I think this is a conversation that we had before, mm-hmm. that normally vegan desserts are either raw things that are nuts and dates and bananas and some sort of like flour mixing together, or they are, you know, like a very simple cake or something like that. And I think the challenge for me was two things. One, try to find a really good presentation that really represented where I was coming from, like, you know, my story and all that. And then the second thing was for it to taste, if not exactly, at least pretty darn close as a regular dessert using regular ingredients. And at least for that cheesecake, I think I did what I wanted to do with it. But it was interesting, like, each time that I kept making it, how I tried to say, okay, now I want to use, you know, I feel like this applesauce that I did needed to be more, you know, less greedy and more, less than an apple sauce and more like a, you know, something that you would eat at a fine dining restaurant. Mm-hmm. And I think, I mean, I'm starting to see more and more how, you know, pastry chefs are putting this challenge of, okay, now we want to make everything gluten-free and vegan because it's the trend and, you know, but I also think it's challenging so many people to get to know these resources and be able to use these other ingredients that, you know, normally you would not use for a pastry production, you know, which I think it's great. Now I'm like, every time, like, I'm thinking of a dessert, I'm like, ooh, I wonder if you do that caramel and put coconut cream instead of heavy cream, that would be delicious. And then you can do this. And then, you know, it just, if you are a passionate person, then it sparks creativity where it doesn't normally is. So it's a great thing to have.
So what have you found to be some of, like, the staple ingredients you're using as a pastry chef that are vegan? Like, what swap outs have you been able to make to create fine dining pastries and desserts, plant-based?
Yeah, so we talk about these plant-based butter. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I think I tried all of the ones that are at the store. and it depends on the application. I've been working on a puff pastry lately, and I've been trying all the different butters. They all seem to kind of work because they're a fat, so it's not like, doesn't have to be. My favorite one in particular, it's Miyoko's. I don't know what it has, but it really, from a standpoint of how it works in the chemistry of baking, it works exactly as butter. Like, it gives you that mouthfeel of, you know, kind of like buttery, kind of like if you make a cookie with it, it's kind of like soft and crumbly. It's not like a chunk of fat. That it's what I've found with other butters. But then all of them have their usage. Because, for example, the one that it's like the most popular one, Earth Balance.
Yeah.
They have like the baking sticks, and those work really well for cakes and things like that. And then I really like the Milkadamia one for, like, you know, if you're going to spread something just to have that butter kind of flavor, that one works well too. And those are the main three that, you know, when you go to the store, that's what you find. And then definitely, well, we were just talking before we started recording. When we first started doing this, like, oh, I've been thinking about becoming vegan, you know, and then, you know, here we are like 20 weeks later or something like that. And I was telling Diana this morning, like, yeah, I'm down to 4 meals in the week, four full days that I'm like plant-based all day. And I really, like, every time that I'm cooking, I'm trying to think, okay, well, maybe I could be able to use this instead of this. And I think the most interesting thing, and I think with any chef that you talk, it's trying to find those flavors. And that really impressed me in the dinner when I saw what everybody else had done. It's not just like, let's saute some vegetables. I think there's two versions of chefs with the vegan food. There's chefs that are no vegan. And then there's chefs that, okay, so how do I make this taste like meat? Or how do I make this taste like, you know, it's not just a roasted cauliflower. Let me try to find spices and things to just give this flavor to the food that we're doing. And I think as chefs, that should always be our challenge, to find that creativity where in places that we are unexpected, you know. For pastry in particular, you know, like you have your staple ingredients, you know, you have a good chocolate, and then any chocolate that it's fair trade, that you know that it's being processed, you know, with safe practices, that has no other content but like a really good high content of cocoa butter and cocoa fat, then you know that you can substitute that regardless of the fact that might not be in the label vegan, but it's there are companies that are very certifiable on their ethics on how they work and things like that. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to find a vegan certification. Yeah. So if you know or you're able to talk to these people and see, listen, we don't use any dairy or anything in our practices, and you know that you are able to use the chocolate. And then as I keep like talking to people and thinking about, you know, like I think this is, we talk about this the last time we talk about vegan food and plant-based options. I think this is a future. I don't think this is a fad that it's just going to be like, oh yeah, everybody's becoming vegan. I think that we have limited resources in the world, and then we are the ones responsible to make sure that they are kept. So, I mean, if just changing your meal habits are going to make this happen, even if it's not fully, then why not try it, you know? On the ingredient side, that is what we were talking about. I've been trying a lot of things with almond milk, a mix of almond and coconut milk. That seems to work the best because the coconut milk gives you that fattiness. Mm-hmm. Me particularly, when I drink or eat things with just full on coconut milk, I feel really bad. Like it's heavy for my stomach.
It's very heavy.
Especially if you like use the ones that are like, you know, like the canned ones that are like full fat coconut milk. But even there's a couple ones that, without talking too much about brands, that are heavy from the container. Yeah. So the ones that are like a mix of coconut milk and almond milk work really well for pastry things. I've been just working on this kind of like pancake/waffle recipe. And I noticed that it does make a really big difference when I use the coconut/almond mixture than the almond just by itself. So it's just so watery. I mean, I know benefit-wise, the almond has the fat/protein advantage for you, but it's just like as texture, it just feels a lot better when you're working with it.
I want a good cookie or a good pancake.
When, like, I know, right? I think for me the biggest challenge is the egg part, you know?
Yeah.
I think for as a professional, trying to find ingredients when you're making, okay, well, I have this really good chocolate chip cookie, right? And it has, you know, I've tried the flaxseed water mix. I've tried chia with water and like let it bloom and kind of like have that consistency that it's kind of binding. You can do like a potato starch kind of like slur, and that helps too. But I think that, you know, trying to challenge yourself as a professional to find same texture, same mouthfeel, I think that's what it's the most important thing.
I think there's a little bit of a delay. Sorry. How do you think your misconceptions, or did you have like misconceptions going into like cooking something vegan? What did you think about like vegan food and vegan baking and before you got into it?
I think that one of them was the price. I was surprised. Mm-hmm. I think I've tried doing vegan and gluten-free things probably like 6 years ago.
Okay.
I don't know. I went to the store and I bought all these things, and then it was like $200 for flours and some nut milks, some kind of butter, a tofutti cream cheese, and something else. And then when I started working with it, it just wasn't working because my mind was set on, okay, well, you cream the butter, and then you, I don't know, add flours or whatever, and then add eggs. And then I think you really have to understand the chemistry behind it. And this is not for the, you know, normal person. Like, people that are vegan, they already know what to substitute with what. So it's a more easily transition to make things rather than somebody that has no clue how to do anything with plant-based ingredients. And then there's not that binding ingredients that come in. And every time we talk about it, I feel that, you know, like you want to incorporate everything for everybody. So like when I try to do stuff, I try to do things that are gluten-free and vegan and not just vegan, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard. I think that the gluten part, it's like a whole other conversation by itself.
Yeah.
You know, not being able to develop those gluten proteins when you're working with a cake or a croissant or a cookie or whatever it is that you're doing, it's really hard to compensate not having the gluten and having to use five or six different, you know. Well, thanks to Bob's Red Mill, now that they have like flours that are more, you know, useful when you're working on things. Still,
yeah.
People tell me, oh yeah, you just grab one cup and then, yeah, I get it, you settle for that because that's what you can eat, but not necessarily has to be like that, you know. I think the biggest misconception for me, one was the price. This second time around when I went to cook, I went to Whole Foods and I think I spent like $60.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh wow, okay, well that wasn't that bad. So I think that I enter like with a different mindset just because of that at the beginning when I first started doing all the desserts. And then the second one is just as I kept working, like for example, I started doing the cheesecake. So I'm thinking in my head, okay, cheesecake has all these like, you know, creamy consistency. So how do we get to that? And then I started reading and then, you know, I'm like, okay, let's add cashews to see if we can kind of find that fattiness that the mascarpone has and trying to incorporate all that. And then at the end, I think I worked on this for like probably a full week. It was like 5 days of me just like, okay, that didn't work. I need to do it again. That didn't work. I need to do it again. There were other components of the dessert, of both desserts that I wasn't intimidated at all. Like for example, the sorbet was something that, you know, like, you know, it has nothing that it's going to be. But as I started working on it, then I realized that ingredients that we normally use that I say, okay, like ice cream stabilizers, yeah, things like that. They have whey protein. And then I'm like, okay, well, I can't use this. I need to find a vegan thing, a vegan stabilizer to be able to use it. So it's, you know, as you get into it, it's kind of like, oh, wow, no, I can't use that. Like the issue with the sugar and, you know, like, okay, I'm going to buy the organic sugar and how much more of a bigger grain it has because of that process of like making the grain of the sugar smaller with the bones and all that. It's a completely different ingredient to work with, even though it's the same from the same plant. You know, there are some sugars that have added like anti-caulking ingredients. So they,
what does that even like mean? Oh,
yeah, they kind of like some, not necessarily talc, but some kind of mineral that what it does, it prevents the sugar from getting, because it's sugar, it's just, it calls for humidity. So it's just gonna make, like, for example, those really fine, super fine sugars, they have other ingredients added to it to prevent them to get like into rock hard balls or things like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, as you start reading and looking and researching about it, then you're like, okay, well, this is a go. And then, you know, I think the most important thing, and then we talked about this before too, is how do you make the same texture that you would have with regular cream,
yeah,
butter, regular whatever gelatin, how do you make that transition into vegan? So for the butter, we already talked about that. The cream, I found a really good product from a company called Riches that they do, like, pretty much all they do is toppings. So it's, they have like a gourmet open that it's just like cream that have some fats, and then you can whip it, and then it stabilizes really well. So they have a new product that it's called vegan coconut something. It's a stabilized coconut fat. So it looks white. It tastes like coconut cream. It doesn't have, the only thing it has, it's a carrageenan.
Yeah.
Stabilize it. But besides that, it's, out of everything that it's so bad, this is like the most natural thing. And it's very stable to use. Mm-hmm. So when, I think that was the one ingredient that for me was really hard to find. It was like something airy that you could incorporate into, you know, to make a mousse or make something that was like nice and airy. So I found this product, which you could do the same with the coconut fat from a coconut can. Then you take, mm-hmm, just the fat from the top and you can whip that because of the high content of fat. And you, sometimes you can add a little bit of coconut oil to it and it will help you with the whipping agent of it. Diana asked me, it's like, oh, let's work on a recipe.
Yes.
It was like all out. I'm like, okay, let's do this and let's do that.
Yeah, but the caveat was I wanted you to make a recipe that I could do, and I am not good. Like, I need ease me into like the baking stuff because I don't know anything about it.
No, but I think that, you know, like, I wanted to make it maybe not that puff pastry thing that I wanted. But maybe like a nice dark shell where you can put, you know, like some sort of a cream of fruit or like a veggie tart or a quiche or something like that, that, you know, not necessarily, but I wanted to do something that was like versatile, that you were able to do for sweets or savory, especially now that I'm cooking.
Do you think since we did the James Beard dinner that you have become a lot more conscious of what you're cooking, and have you started to maybe in dishes traditionally that would call for non-vegan ingredients, have you like swapped them out at all and continued 1,000%, on?
Yes.
Yeah.
I I think that on my personal life, yes, 100%, I'm like more conscious of what it is that I'm putting in my mouth and how does that affect the environment around me. But in the kitchen, I feel that the majority of the groups and the people that we cater to, more and more have a part of their group that, you know, they need to have a vegan friendly option or a, so yes, like we've had the exercise from the dinner was in November, from November, December, January, February, of trying to find a lot more vegan and plant-based options. I think for both us, the pastry and the savory side, part of my job, we haven't mentioned that, I work with convention groups.
Yes.
So we cater to groups that are, you know, 2,000, 5,000 people.
My God.
And when you have 10% of that group that are vegan, or the people that are organizing their group are vegan and they really want to portray that part of the company that they're representing, it's conscious about, you know, their footprint in the environment, and they don't want to use any plastic, and they don't want to have anything that it's not anything, but like a portion of the menu to eat plant-based just to reduce that footprint. Then it makes you think, if there are companies that are willing to pay a lot of money for other people to cook and incorporate that into their philosophy of the company, then we should be doing the same. So I think that has been a new challenge that we encountered this last year in the beginning of this year, where, you know, we're talking about, you know, okay, we have breakfast, we don't want to have just vegan yogurts, we also want to have like this little parfait of chia pudding with fruits, and then we also want to have you know, like tofu scrambles and things like that. And then, you know, I think the part where it becomes kind of hard, it's with the breakfast pastries, because there's like very little market for big productions where you're making, you know, vegan croissants, and they are there, but it's just, I think, well, I work with French people, so for them, the most important thing in the croissant is the flavor of the butter, and that the butter is so, it's the main ingredient of the pastry. So how do you go from making a croissant with like a imported butter to make a croissant with like a vegan or margarine or some sort of, you know, other kind of fat that it's not butter, you know? So it's just those preconceptions of people. If there's a market for it, then why don't do it, you know?
Yeah.
The more and more I see, like, there's this girl in Miami that she's doing these beautiful croissants. Like, at the beginning, I was like, that can't be vegan. Like, how? You know, and they're beautiful and big, and that you can see like the roll of the dough inside after the croissant is cut and all that. And I'm like, that's impossible. And then as I'm reading, I'm like, no, yeah, well, if you use like a mix of, you know, a vegan butter and some other fats to incorporate to the dough, then, you know, it might work, because everything else is just water, yeast, and flour.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think there's definitely a lot of trends right now. I think one of the biggest ones, it's like pastry chefs, and not only pastry chefs, but pastry companies trying to tap into that market. Let's call it by what it is. It's another way of making money. And I noticed like all these chefs that are used to working with, you know, traditional ingredients, like going into, you know, I went to this class, I think it was around November or October, and the chef, it was a French chef, and he was talking about the aquafaba, and then he's like, the best aquafaba is the one from this brand of chickpeas, and then he was like all into aquafaba, like talking and talking about how, you know, like the more the thicker the water, then you have more aeration that could happen when you're using it. So I was like, oh wow, like I you know, like he was into it. I was like, and then I'm like asking all these questions, and he's like, talk to me after the class, we're gonna talk about this a little bit more. Like he was like telling me about like how different brands of coconut oil have, you know, the you would think, I don't know, like I want to believe that if I'm buying something that it's labeled coconut oil, it's coconut oil, but it's like sometimes the amount of fat used, it's not the same from brand to brand. So it's not the same if you're going to use just a tablespoon of coconut oil and put it in a pan and sear, I don't know, cauliflower, you know, it's like a fat, the fat will be fine. But then he recommended me the Spectrum brand, and it I noticed it's a big difference for baking. So you incorporate that into mixes, and sometimes when you're making mousse, to kind of give that mouth feel of the back of your mouth. Fat plays a big paper in pastry, because when you are designing creatively, okay, I'm gonna make a dessert and it has a cake and it has, you know, like a lemon curd, meringue or whatever, right? You really have to use components of the dessert to kind of break down what you're feeling in your mouth. So mm-hmm. if you're gonna have, for example, a cake, then you have that sponginess of the cake, then you have the lemon curd, or just to piggyback on the example that I just did. So you have the citrus of the lemon, it's gonna cut down a little bit on that gluten that you're eating. And then, you know, if you have something sweet that goes on top, then it's just gonna round it up all in your mouth. So mm-hmm. the fat plays a really good, it's kind of like the carrier of the flavors when they go into your mouth. So if you have something that it's fatty, it will coat your mouth with that fat. And then when you have something citrus, like passion fruit or lemon or blackberries or raspberries, whatever, then it cuts down that fat and it really gives you a different profile in your mouth of what you're tasting. So that's why, you know, like you really want to try to use wood quality fats and all that.
Yeah.
Again, I had no idea when I first started doing this. And it's not something, I think it's more out of my personal curiosity. What I've noticed is that more and more every time that I'm doing something, how do we make this vegan?
You know,
we have this dessert, it has these ingredients, how do we make it vegan? And then you start creating your own little, like, you know, like the same thing as any career. Like I call it the toolbox mm-hmm. or the backpack. You put in the things that you think they work for you. So I have like my vegan backpack where I have, you know, an ingredient, a recipe for a panna cotta, a recipe for a mousse, a recipe for the cheesecake, a recipe for chocolate, a good chocolate cake, cookies and things like that. And then when I have to make a dessert, then I just put all these components together and then I try to make something out of it. It works the same way if I was working with the regular ingredients. It's just that I'm always now on the look of, we made this really good dessert with regular ingredients. How do we turn that into plant-based in case that we need it? And I noticed that's how it, like, that's how James Beard changed my mindset. So thank you, Diana, for that.
Oh, thank you.
So it's been I think a beautiful discovery for me. Personally, because it's challenging, but also, you know, professionally trying to find how do we make this happen for 1,000 people you know, so it's a good thing to have in your toolbox.
So we're running out of time, but I do have one final question. What is your next challenge for vegan cooking, baking? I should say vegan baking.
I've been trying, well, I'm working right now on that recipe for the puff pastry that you can use it for Napoleons and, you know, some sort of cheese steak. I did it the other day with a little bit of nutritional cheese, and I added some spices, and it was really nice. But I think I really want to make that toolbox a lot bigger on other things. I'm thinking about the croissant thing. So
yum.
I think that's what I'm going to start working on the next. I think it'll be a good challenge to see what kind of, you know, fad, and just to have that option under the umbrella of things that we have. Besides that, I don't know, who knows, if this goes well and then it's something that I like, I would love to start trying to do things to sell or something like that. So
I've got a question. Well, I love that. So this is a question I have, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but do you, when Las Vegas is open again, and obviously, like, I know it's going to be a while before we have groups coming back in, but do you see something to the extent of just swapping out what was traditionally non-vegan desserts for vegan desserts and just having that as the option?
You know, when this goes back to normal, or our new normal.
Yeah.
I don't think it's ever going to be back to normal, but it'll be a new normal. Mm-hmm. I do see these options to be more standardized in our menus in general.
Yeah.
I mean, you cannot talk for everybody. I can only talk for what I do. And I know that it was a conversation that we had already had before all this started, on how if we were offering, you know, 5 plated desserts for this, then definitely one of them need to be vegan and gluten-free. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody's on the same bandwagon. I don't think it flies anymore not to take that in consideration.
Yeah.
One, because of the amount of people that are getting more conscious of what they eat and how they want to, you know, be health conscious about having things, but also about dessert. You know, dessert only represents, I would say, like 6% of sales when you work in a restaurant. Not everybody that eats and has dessert. But if you can tap into this, you know, group of people that are normally are looking for different things to eat and get something that it's good and it's consistent with everything else that you have on your menu, then why not? You know, I think that's where we're going. I just don't know exactly when that will be or how that will be. That's where we were going at the beginning of the year. I think that's definitely once this parenthesis that we're living ends, then I think that's what we're going to start back on again.
I am very excited. Chef Cynthia Nguanzo, Assistant Executive Pastry Chef at MGM Grand, thank you so much for your time. I adore you. I cannot wait to come eat all of your amazing pastries, please. Can we do that soon?
Yes, yes. Let's wait for the restrictions to be.
Yes.
We can do things.
Thank you all so much for tuning into The Good Fork. For more information, go to veganzavy.com and then click on The Good Fork. Everybody, take care, be well, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of The Good Fork. I am host Diana Edelman of Vegans Baby. I appreciate you all so much. For more on this episode and other show notes, head over to vegansbaby.com and click on The Good Fork podcast. And for more vegan dining, vegan news, and where to go eat in Vegas and beyond, head over to vegansbaby.com. Have a great one.